Galatians 3, today on Through the Word, and we are entering into one of the most essential truths in all of religion and faith, and one of the most divisive arguments. What makes a person good? Better yet, what makes them righteous in God's sight? Is it works or faith? Is it law or grace? In other words, do you work to make yourself good enough? Do you earn it, or do you believe, trust God for it, and rest in His work? This is not just a philosophical debate over doctrine. This is the great battle of religion and spirituality. These are the dividing lines, faith and works, grace and law. That difference between law and grace is the dividing line between Christianity and every religion in the world. If you want to know what sets Jesus apart, get to know grace. Let's dig into Galatians 3 at verse 1. O foolish Galatians, who has bewitched you? It was before your eyes that Jesus Christ was publicly portrayed as crucified. Let me ask you only this. Did you receive the Spirit by works of the law or by hearing with faith? Are you so foolish? Having begun by the Spirit, are you now being perfected by the flesh? Paul's words are strong. Twice he calls the Galatians foolish, and it was intended to hit home. Falling into legalism makes you dumb. Just look at church history. Religion and ritual makes us fear progress and act foolish, but grace makes us free. So how were the Galatians foolish? They started at the cross, but tried to add to it. But Jesus paid the full price. It is finished. Paul takes them back to the start. When you were first saved, did you work for it? Or just hear the gospel and believe it? It was faith, of course. You started by the Spirit, so don't try to finish the job in your own strength and effort. In verse 5, following Christ means living by faith, from beginning to end. Faith for salvation, faith to receive the Spirit, faith for miracles, all faith. You can spot dangerous teaching when they say you're saved by faith in Jesus and then they add their extras. Get baptized in the temple, complete our sacraments, keep the Sabbath, put more money in the offering. So in 3:6, Paul sends us all the way back to the beginning of the Bible, to prove that faith was always the plan, from the very first. Verse 6 is a direct quote from Genesis. Abraham believed God, and it was counted to him as righteousness. Now, Abraham was not just a man of faith. Verse 9 says he was the man of faith, the spiritual father of all the believers in the true God. Before God's law was ever in the picture, and before Abraham was circumcised or did a single act of righteousness, he believed God, and it was counted to him as righteousness. The word counted used here is a business or accounting term used for credit to a bank account. God saw Abraham's faith, and he went to Abraham's ledger and wrote him in as righteous, right in God's eyes. Now this is big. Righteousness is the only standard that can qualify a person for heaven, the only way in. So in verse 7, know then that it is those of faith who are the sons of Abraham. In other words, we put our faith in the same God and the same promises, and we're Abraham's kids. The Jews had thought that it was all about being Abraham's descendants by blood and proving it by circumcision, that somehow God played favorites in heaven, us better than them. But they missed the point. Verse 8 reminds them that God's promise to Abraham was always a plan for everyone. In you shall all the nations be blessed. God's blessing was always based on a promise, not on earning it. And in verse 16, that promise came through one singular descendant of Abraham, Jesus Christ. What promise was that? Justification by faith. So where does that leave people who rely on works and law, on a checklist of rules and rituals? Verse 10 says that they are left under a curse. The Old Testament law places a curse on anyone who doesn't follow all the law, every last one. Break one law and you're done. Then in verse 11, now it is evident that no one is justified before God by the law, for the righteous shall live by faith. There it is. That one verse is the very heart. It is a quote of Habakkuk, quoted three times between Galatians, Romans, and Hebrews. That one verse was the spark that ignited the single greatest change in church history and transformed the world. Martin Luther was a Catholic monk besieged with guilt and condemnation until he at last understood, the righteous shall live by faith. What does that mean? Like Abraham, we are declared righteous simply by faith. and then we live out that righteousness, also by faith. Our faith guides our living. He promises hope, and we believe. He calls us righteous, and by faith, we live right. No earning it, just trusting it. That simple truth changed the world. And while Catholics and Protestants have both embraced that truth doctrinally to some extent, I only wish I could say that we all lived it out. We still fall back into working for it. Speaking of working for it, if it's about faith and not law, why did God give the law in the first place? What was the purpose of the law? Verse 19, why then the law? It was added because of transgressions. And in verse 24, so then, the law was our guardian until Christ came, in order that we might be justified by faith. So the law did have a purpose, of course. It was not opposed to God's promise of justification by faith. It worked towards it as a guardian, and it still does. Before we come to Jesus by faith, God's law is the only thing that keeps us from lawless chaos. In verse 23, the law holds us captive, proves our guilt, and shackles our hands to keep us from further damage. But it can never set us free. Verse 25, but now that faith has come, we are no longer under a guardian. For in Christ Jesus, you are all sons of God through faith. In other words, Jesus set us free to be God's kids. And when we're all God's kids, something amazing happens in church. All of those barriers that separate and divide us, all the ways we use religion to judge each other and separate ourselves, all of those walls come tumbling down. Look at verse 28. There is neither Jew nor Greek. There is neither slave nor free. There is no male and female, for you are all one in Christ Jesus. Now that is one bold and glorious statement. Paul names the great human divides, race, religion, status, gender, and demolishes them all. Every religious or cultural split among people that sets one above another, every caste system that sets priests above peasants, nobles above nobodies, and haves above have-nots, is gone in his grace, and all are one in Christ Jesus. Now, if that is not your experience in church, if going to church feels more like a game show called Who's the Best Christian, or a magazine called Us Not Them, then please read Galatians 3 and find grace. If you want to dig deeper, I'll recommend two of the best books I've ever read, Why Grace Changes Everything by Chuck Smith and What's So Amazing About Grace by Philip Yancey. It is true, there is nothing in this world so amazing as grace, and there is nowhere in this world to find it as we find it in Jesus. The law came through Moses, but grace and truth came through Jesus Christ.
Join us next time as we continue the journey, one chapter at a time. And remember, faith comes by hearing, and hearing through the Word.